we're still animated by a worldly wisdom, how can we grow? You know, it's the old story of if you've got a full cup and you want to get something else, what have you got to do first? If you don't pour it out, what's going to happen when you pour the new stuff in there? You ever have that happen? You've got a Coke or something, and you get ready, and you're pouring it in there, and all of a sudden it's overflowing because you had some water in there? You're going, ah, now what do I do? Well, you dump it out, and you take what's left. But that's what worldly wisdom is. And you remember what Paul said about that in 1 Corinthians chapter, I think chapter 3? He said, if you think you're wise, what do you need to do? You need to become a fool so you can become wise. And unfortunately, sometimes the transition from being in the world to becoming a Christian, you do feel foolish because you're having to make so many different decisions, and you're almost afraid to make a decision because you make decisions and then you read the Bible and what do you find out? Well, that was the worst thing I could have done. And maybe you damaged your relationship because of it. So James wants us to be acutely aware that there are two kinds of wisdoms, and those two kinds of wisdoms are going to be seen, and we're going to really get into that this evening when we talk about chapter 4 and verse 1, where these wars and fights come from. And the world, you remember back in chapter 3, what did he say the tongue sets on fire? The course of nature, or the world, and it is set on fire by hell. And so those words that we're using, and we can be really wise. Are most of us pretty good at cutting somebody if we want to? Saying something so rude and so terrible that we just take all the wind out of somebody's sails? And so where does that come from? Well, the tongue is where it comes out. But now, tonight, we're going to find out where it comes from. And unfortunately, it's tied in with these two wisdoms. There's one wisdom that comes from beneath. And when I make a decision that causes a fight or causes a war, and that's an interesting vocabulary setup. We'll have to talk a little bit about that when we get there. But when we are in a war with someone, what do I know? Where did that come from? If it didn't start with me, then it came from them. But usually it's because there's some wisdom that I didn't have. A soft answer will turn away much wrath. And that'll work, although David said, I'm for peace, but when I speak, they're for war. So sometimes you're going to meet people who are so contrary that no matter what you do, it's going to end up that way. But the way that Paul put it in Romans is, as much as is in within you, or as much lies within you, be at peace with all men. So the key in this section is making that assessment. Have I learned how to control my tongue by using the wisdom from above? See, we've left the tongue. Now we're coming into this wisdom from above. Now we're going to come to the actual things that come out into people's lives. So we spent a lot of time on that. I'm not going to go back and review a lot of it. Let's just start with, I think, mercy and good fruits we're pretty comfortable with. We've had a lot of lessons lately on good works, and even in chapter 2 he said mercy is with, or judgment is without what? Mercy for those who don't show any mercy. So if you want mercy from God, what had you better be doing? You better be the most merciful person on earth in your relationships with everyone, your spouses, your children, your friends, your brethren. We've got this opportunity to butter the bread, more or less. I mean, we got the opportunity to set this up so that when we go before God, we'll have the most merciful judge. And if I have to choose between a harsh judge and a merciful judge, what would I want? Okay, well, how do I get it? By showing mercy. So James made that clear. All right, so let's talk a little bit. The first word there after good fruits is without. And depending on your translation, it's a totally different word, totally different definition. So in the American Standard, okay, we're now on page 1 in the bottom fourth where it says without partiality, because that's what the New King James has. But unfortunately, this word has two distinct meanings. And the American Standard uses one, and that is without variation. Or without varying, unwavering. And that's what the New American Standard has, is unwavering. And then the ESV, NIV, which, you know, aren't the best translations, but still, the New King James has it also, and that is impartial or without partiality. Now, is there much difference between being unwavering and being without partiality? Are those kind of two different realms? Unwavering means you never doubt. You don't doubt God. You're not like the surge of the sea driven by the wind and toss. You're unwavering. You're convicted. And that's one meaning of the term. The other meaning is, in judgment, you don't have partiality. Now, what's nice about this is, does it matter? Do Christians need to waver? No. Do Christians need to be impartial? Yeah. So, from a grammar perspective, it's an interesting study whether or not this is the wisdom. I think both of them are wisdom from above. But it's interesting. I'm not going to take the time on the definition today, but let's just look at a couple of verses on page 2. Now, the first set of verses, I have 4 or 5 of them there, are all about partiality. And one of the worst things that anyone can ever do, I mean, even in our culture today, how do people look at prejudice? What is prejudice? Is that a nice word? No. And what does it mean? Prejudge, which means what? Don't confuse me with the facts, because
I already made up my mind.
My mind's already made up. You couldn't say anything that would get me to like you. Or you couldn't say anything that would get me to accept you, because, and I'm prejudiced. Now, where's that found in the church? You know, I talk to the guys in Malawi sometimes, and I tell them, you know, if God took a potato peeler and he peeled all of us, would we all look about the same? And they think that's pretty funny. And I think it is, too. Because without our skin, what's the difference? We're all exactly the same. And so there's no room for prejudice. And, of course, he talks about the small and the great and the rich and the poor. And of course, in the church, he tells Timothy in 1 Timothy 5, that second to the last verse there, he says, I charge you before God and the Lord Jesus Christ and the elect angels that you observe these things without prejudice, which is this similar word here, without partiality, doing nothing with partiality. So if you've got a preacher and you know that if this person does something, nothing's going to happen. But if this person does something, he's going to get the book thrown at him. What happens to that church pretty soon? Because there's partiality. It's going to have some serious issues. And so it can't be. The wisdom from above is not partial, because is God partial? God doesn't have any partiality. And so the second one is wavering. And I think that all we have to look at, we can think about Abraham. When Abraham was told, you're going to have a son, but Sarah couldn't have a son, and he had to wait a year, what could have happened to that promise? What could he have done? Could he have been like that guy in James chapter 1, like the surge of the sea? One day, I think it's going to happen. The next day, man, she's not showing yet. And yes, back and forth. But what does Paul say in Romans? What did he do? He never wavered. He waxed strong in faith. He gave glory to God. And then the interesting application there in verses 24 and 25, and the verses here, I'm just not going to read it tonight, but he says there, if we have the same unwavering faith that God raised Jesus from the dead, what's God going to do with our faith? He's going to impute it as righteousness to us. So when you're taking the Lord's Supper, if you're, oh man, you know, I don't know if the Lord even died and raised for the dead. If you're thinking stuff like that, you're wavering. And that's not appropriate. And we've got to get past that. All right, so the wisdom from above, one or the other. But I really like this this passage in Hebrews 10, right above, without hypocrisy. It says, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. For he who promised is faithful. Now, what did God say about that back in chapter 6 about how could we have strong assurance and have an anchor beyond the veil? What do we have? God swore with an oath, and he gave a promise. And he can't lie. So you have two immutable things. You have the promise, you have the oath, and then you have he can't lie. I mean, you really have three immutable things, but he only deals with two there. All right, so let's talk about hypocrisy. Or without hypocrisy. There's three passages I have here. Let love be without hypocrisy. Why would you have hypocrisy if you were showing love? What would be your goal? Okay, I don't like you, but I'm going to do this for you because I have to. Is that love? No, it's something else. That's hypocrisy. And then there's other situations where maybe you don't like someone and you don't want to help them, but you're forced to do it because everybody's watching. But what's really going on in your heart? Remember that proverb where it says, if you're invited to eat with a rich man and he says, eat all you want, and what does the Bible say?
Put a knife to your throat.
Why? Because his heart is not with you. In his heart there are abominations. And there's people that are that way. You know, they'll offer you the best piece of meat when you're at their house, but what are they hoping? Better say no. I want that piece of meat myself. That's hypocrisy. And so, you know, there is a line here. I have a proverb I came up with years ago. If you can't feel your way into a better way of acting, you can act your way into a better way of feeling. Does that make sense? If you force yourself to do what's right long enough, sooner or later, what's going to happen? You're going to start enjoying it. You know, and so maybe those first few months when we have to attend services every time the doors are open, we're kind of maybe a little chagrined at that, because what did we do before we became a Christian? Sunday was another day off. I mean, Sunday was a day better. It was even better than Saturday because everybody was at church, so you had all this freedom. But once you become a Christian, what do you find out? Well, but if you act your way, and I think we've all done that. Have you ever heard somebody say, I didn't feel like coming tonight, but I'm really glad I did because now I feel so much better? And that's acting your way into a better way of feeling. Now, that's not hypocrisy. Sometimes you have to force yourself to do what's right because you know it's right. And it's not that you don't want to do it, and if no one was there, you wouldn't be doing it. It's that God is always there, and you want to be doing it, so you're forcing yourself until your emotions catch up with you. And sometimes, isn't that what self-control is? I'd like to punch you in the nose right now, but I'm going to put my hands in my pocket and walk away. Well, you hypocrite, why don't you just go ahead and punch me in the nose? Well, who's going to talk like that? But that's what he's dealing with here. There's no hypocrisy. So make sure that you're not just acting, you know, one way when you're here in a totally different way at work, in a different way around other people. Because generally speaking, what's that telling you? Is your heart in it? Your heart's not in it.
It does more damage.
Yeah.
Than anything.
Well, you can a conscience be seared? Yeah. And boy, there's no quicker way than that. All right. Then verse 18, the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace. Now, let's go back to the definition of righteousness. I preached a sermon on this a few months ago. And I started out with that little child who's screaming, that's not fair, or that's mine. Because what does a child have a clear sense of?
Right and wrong.
Right and wrong, and where the property lines are. And so, is that righteousness right there? If it's not fair, then is it righteousness? No, that's not. That's not righteousness. Now, the child could be wrong. I mean, the parent may have to say, well, wait a minute. No, it is fair. Here's what God said. And we used to tell our kids this a lot. You know, this is what God's telling us to do. This isn't something we're making up here. We're doing, let me show you the verse. This is what we have to do when you do this. And so, pretty soon, what's the child realize? That's perfectly fair. But if you want peace, the fruit of righteousness is, I know the boundaries, and I don't cross them. I know where your wrong boundaries are. I know what's yours. I know where your dignity line is. I know where your property lines are. I know where your possessions are. And because I'm righteous, do I respect that? I respect that. And so, thou shalt not covet, and then of course he lists everything your neighbor has, because anything you covet, is that fair? Well, you don't have any right to that. That's your neighbor's. Now, ambition is different from coveting. If I see that you have something really nice, and I say to myself, I'd like to have that too, so I'm going to work as hard as I can so I can get something equivalent to what he has. Is that covetousness? No. But if I want to take what's yours, that's not fair. And a lot of the wars and battles that have come up in the world today, that's where they're coming from, is somebody's wanting to take something that belongs to somebody else. And I'll tell you, like I said, when you take that, when that little child snatches something away from that other kid, what's going to happen next? That's mine. If it doesn't come back, what's next? Well, the battle lines get drawn, right? Charles?
Yeah, because that also be the term of self-righteousness. I mean, if you don't watch it, it could go into self-righteousness.
Well, yeah, I mean, self-righteousness is a serious issue, but this is the wisdom from above. So,
right, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, you've got to be careful with self-righteousness, which basically means it's fair because I say it's fair. When my dad said, "You do as I say, not as I do," would that be self-righteousness? Yeah, because that's not fair. Of course, am I dumb enough to say that's not fair? No, I don't. I never said that to my dad. I thought it, and I lost some respect because he said it. But and when I was out of his presence, I kind of felt the same way. Well, I'm going to do as I say and not as you do, because that's how it was. So yeah, it can be that. But here we're dealing with, if you want to sow the fruit of righteousness, then what you're doing is you're respecting the boundary lines and you're not crossing. You're not crossing them with your words. You're not crossing them with your emotions. And you're not crossing them with your actions. A lot of times it's the words and the emotions that create these wars. Because like I say, that's where we're headed. So let's go ahead and turn to page 3. And as I noted in the introduction, and I'm not going to spend any time on it tonight, but there is a chapter break, but the chapter break is pretty arbitrary because we haven't changed subjects at all. He asks a simple question: where do wars and fights come from? And the term "where" is a very strong adverb for where did that come from? What's the source of that? So, what is the source of all of the battles that are going on in your life? What is the source?
From within us.
Okay, from within. Now, does it always have to be within you? Did Jesus say in the Sermon on the Mount, "You remember your brother has something against you," but he also says in Matthew chapter 18, if your brother sins against you, you go. So either way, if I caused it, if he caused it, It's because of, now, can you all, did Paul say, "As much as in you lieth"? Can you always get peace with people? If somebody says, "The only way you can have peace with me is if you fall away from the Lord and never go back to church again," didn't Jesus talk about that in Matthew 10? "I didn't come to bring peace on earth. I came to bring a sword. I came to set a man against his father and a daughter against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes will be in his own household." And Jesus then goes on to say, "He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me." So these wars and battles can come from, not from me, but from within somewhere else. But do I always start there? This is your problem, not my problem. Is that where we start? No, you never start there. Always start with yourself. Could I have said it better? Could I have said it differently? And so even if, you know, in the middle of a Bible discussion where somebody gets angry, is it okay to just say, "Well, that's their problem"? We always say it just exactly right? No, we need to think about it. We need to think about it. We need to go through it in our mind. We may even ask somebody, "What do you think? Should this have been said differently? This person's very upset right now, and I don't want it to stay that way." So, and sometimes the answer is going to be yes, you could have said it better. Sometimes the answer is going to be no, you couldn't have said it any better. Did a lot of people hate Jesus? Think he could have just said it better? If he just said it better, would it have changed anything? No, because Jesus said it all perfectly. And so, but where do they come from? That's James's fundamental question. Stop and think about this. Where are these things coming from? And there's two words here. And I want to read that definition at the very bottom because I think it kind of captures what we're dealing with here. These are big words. These are not small words. When you read quarrel, it's really a mistranslation. This is wars and battles. So let's read the definitions here. They occur together in Homer and Plato. You guys ever heard of Homer or Plato? Yeah, that's the only reason. That's one of the reasons I put that in there. It's also found in the Septuagint in Job 38, and it's found in James chapter 4:1, which is where we are. And in like manner, these two terms, there is the same difference between them as between our own war and battle. Now, what's the difference between a war and a battle? Okay, battle is a one-time thing that may go for a few days. What about a war? It could go on and on and on. All right. So he says and then he gives the Greek term. He talks about the Peloponnesian War and the Battle of Marathon. So there's a war which goes for years, and there's a battle that goes until somebody wins. Now, the battle could go on for a few days, but a battle is a single one-time thing. A war is a long-time thing. Now, why would James use terms for war and battle? And so that's the question that we have to wrestle with, because the sad reality is, when you develop an enemy and you hate them, are you in a battle or a war? It's a war. Where'd that come from? Now, battles are usually, you know, let's take a husband-wife relationship. There's lots of battles in husband-wife relationships, situations that arrive where people get into fights and maybe they don't talk to each other for a few days. But when divorce starts coming up, now where are we? Now we're to the war part. And that happens in congregations. There are battles and there are wars. And it happens in nations and it happens in families. And so you need to ask the question, we all do, if we're in the middle of a battle or if we're in the middle of a war. We need to ask ourselves, where'd that come from? What is the source? And then he says in that next clause toward still at the top of page 4, do they not come from your desire for pleasure? That's the New King James. The New American Standard has, is not the source your pleasures. Now, it's interesting, and every once in a while you find this, that the Greek has two words for where did it come from, but the English can't, so the English only has one. But I want to focus on both of them. The first word's only used a few times in the Scriptures, and you can see it there. It is from this place hence, is the first definition. And in Lewin Nida, he says, a reference to reason or source from this. Is it not from this, namely, from your desires? Now see, he repeats it here. He says, is it not from this, namely, from? Because there's a second one here, and it's the term exit. Now, our building has exit signs. If you choose to walk through the exit sign, where are you going to be next? You're going to be out. You've come out from something. Where did you come from? I came out of the exit. So from whence exits these things. So that might have been even a better translation. Do they not come out from the exit of your desires for pleasure? So he's forcing us to realize something, that the source and the origin of all battles and all wars that we have with people, if we have any part to play in it at all, it's because of our pleasures. And that word pleasure is kind of an interesting word. Most of us here, I think, have heard of the word hedonist. Ever heard that term, hedonist or hedony? That's the Greek word. Let me read you the third definition there. It's basically, in the New Testament, hedony represents one of the many forces which belong to the world of the unsanctified carnality, which strives against the work of God and His Spirit, which drag men again back into the kingdom of evil. Derives from the same root as hedus, which is sweet, pleasant, delightful. What is pleasant to the senses, namely to the sense of taste, feeling of pleasure or enjoyment. It's that pure delight. When Eve was reaching for the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, what was she filled with? This is a delight to the eyes. And it's good for food. And it's desirable to make one wise. How do you think she felt as she reached for that? Man, I'm lucky. This is so wonderful. I feel so good about this decision. And then, of course, she bites into the fruit. What comes next? No pleasure anymore. Now she's spiritually dead, and her world is completely ruined. And within about 100 years, one of her sons is killing another son. I mean, you think she ever rethought that decision? 100 times every day? But that's what we do. And so sin is sweet. How did that woman put it in Proverbs? Stolen water is sweet. And with her many words, she caused him to yield. Of course, this is a young man who would never have committed adultery except for this seductress. Same concept here. Now, if you look on page 5, we have two uses of the term in the scriptures. The one is, those who fell among the thorns are those who, when they've heard, go out and are choked with cares, riches, and pleasures. Now, cares would be your anxieties. Riches would be your desire for wealth. And pleasure would be whatever it is that whether it's drugs or alcohol or sex or money or whatever it is that gives you the pleasure that causes you to feel like you've had to give something up to become a Christian. And hopefully, you know, I think most of us, by the time we decide we want to be a Christian, we already see that those pleasures are what? They're just dead end. There's no real pleasure there. There's a flash of pleasure for a few seconds or a few moments. Then what? Guilt and consequences. And the guilt and the consequences are so much more severe than the pleasure that most of us, before we become a Christian, we've already made that decision. But when it comes to things like this, and I think maybe the best illustration, I think it's going to come up later in the notes, but the best illustration is this. Have you ever seen movies like the ones with Clint Eastwood, where the movie starts with some horrendous injustice being done to him? His wife is killed and he's beaten and left for dead. The rest of the movie shows him setting it up so at the very end he can kill them all. And how do we feel when he's killing them all? Oh man, that's good. I feel so good now. Now if you're laughing, it means you feel that way. Some of you are looking at me going, how could you feel like that? And that's the difference in our makeup. You know, that's why not everybody likes those kind of movies. But did they make a lot of money in the 60s, 70s, and 80s? These vengeance movies? You know, there's so many of them out there. And they always start with an injustice, and you're rooting for the guy, and you're just waiting for him to get the bad guy. And as soon as he gets the bad guy, you just have this sense of rightness about it. And then you shake your head and say, wait a minute, that's God's job. Should this guy be doing that? Vengeance is mine, I will recompense. But see, that's the pleasure that's involved here. When you get angry, when you feel desire for vengeance, it's sweet to give into it. And that's what James is saying, is that when you are in the middle of a battle, it's because you're finding pleasure in it. For some reason, you're going to win. Some people have to win. Whenever they're in a conflict, they've got to have the last word. They've got to be the winner. And there's pleasure if you're the winner. What if you're not the winner? Well, I can't let that happen. We're going to have a battle now. We're going to have to go to war now because you're not going to win. And so what, again, James is trying to help us understand something. When you're not in a good relationship with people, when you're driving down the road full of road rage, just understand something. It's because of the pleasures that war in your members. It's interesting that he uses the same terminology. I never noticed this till tonight, but we just finished Romans chapter 7. And guess what? Here it is again. Remember, he talked about the flesh and how what I want to do, I don't do, and what I hate, I practice, and what I'm just struggling with this. Well, James now takes us to the same place, and he says that's where these things are coming from. Now, what good does that do us? What's the benefit in knowing this? I mean, if we're not going to gain anything from this, we're not going to get any benefit from it. So the next time you're in the midst of one of these battles, or you're in the midst of one of these wars, stop and ask the question, where did this come from? And if your answer is, because I like it, what had you better do? Better stop. Better ask God for forgiveness. Better not carry this to the end. Because in the home, in the church, in the workplace, in the nation, this is going on. We see it in the political realm right now. Is there any pleasure? Was there any pleasure today as the Democrats gave the bills or whatever it is, the impeachment bills to the people? Did you see any pleasure there? Yeah, unfortunately there was. And so there are some people who are really glad because they hate him and they think this might bring him down. Then there's other people who like him, and how do they see it? As an act of unfairness. And those of us in the middle are going, man, my, this is bad for our nation. I hope that's where you're at, is this is terrible for our nation. Whether you like what the Democrats are doing or you like what the Republicans are doing, when they're making a spectacle of the world and trying to bring somebody down, is that a good thing? See, that's not a good thing. And so, let's just stop with that. But my point is this. We need to stop. When we start taking a delight in this stuff, it's time to take a step back, because what's taken over? The flesh. Flesh taken over. Do I want the flesh in control? What did Paul say about that in Romans chapter 8? If you're in the flesh, you cannot please God. If you're in the flesh, it can't be brought into submission to God. The only thing you can do is put it to death. And so that's the point that he's making. Okay, let's go ahead and turn to the little final page here. And these are just a lot of scriptures to emphasize. As you see at the top of the page there, the whole law is fulfilled in one statement. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do you take any pleasure punching yourself in the nose? Anybody here ever take any pleasure in that? But if you love your neighbor as yourself, you're not going to take any pleasure taking something away from him either. This is the solution to the situation. And so there are many pleasures at war in our members. Now, let me read this paragraph right underneath those four verses at the top of the page. With these passages, it is clear that there are many pleasures that war in our members that can lead toward quarrels and conflicts. Enmities, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, wrath, malice, slander, bitterness, and clamor are all fully capable of beginning a quarrel or a conflict. And these are called the lusts of the flesh. And the word lust means what? Something you delight in. And like I said, there are some people, they don't have any sexual desires, they don't have any desire to be rich, but they love to cause fights. They just enjoy it. They like being in the middle of a battle. And there were members of the church like that. You know, unless they could make the person they were trying to teach angry and get them very upset, they didn't feel like they'd done their job. And Jehovah's Witnesses are kind of like that sometimes. They're just so obnoxious sometimes. And then if you get upset about it, what do they say? We're being persecuted for righteousness' sake. Is that what they're doing? No, they're just being rude and obnoxious. But they take pleasure in it. And some people like to be the victim. And some people like to be the victor. And so there's both sides of this. And so we've got to take a step back and make sure that the wisdom we're using is coming from above and that we're not in the middle of these things. Because if there's any battles or quarrels, is somebody in the wrong? Now, it's easy to point fingers. Oh, it's always the other person. Well, that may be, but what had you better start learning what to do? What did Jesus say about turning the other cheek and going the second mile and not letting things get to this point, even if it is the other person's fault? What should we be doing? What did Paul say in 1 Corinthians chapter 6? Why not rather take wrong? Why not rather be defrauded? But no, you defraud your brethren. And so this is a critical thing, because does the Lord want peace? Yeah. And so this is where it's coming from. Now in starting in verse 2, which we'll pick up with next class, we're going to be talking about these emotions and how they impact our relationship with God. Because now we're asking, but we're not receiving. Yeah, why are we not receiving? And so he's going to keep asking us questions until verse 4, And then he's just going to say, adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? And you know something? He's not talking, the pleasures he's talking about, you know, all this time you're thinking, well, the pleasures that he's talking about in verse 3 are all these wonderful delights. No, what is he talking about? He's talking about the fighting. That's the pleasures he's just finished talking about. All right, we'll go ahead and pick up next week with verse 2. Thanks, everybody.